Everybody can understand the beauty of a flower, but a scientist can understand all the important mechanisms inside of that flower and understand how it interacts. And that in that whole process of that is beautiful in itself. And STEM is what creates that deeper understanding in our world that you wouldn't have without it.
Welcome, welcome all to this special episode of the Why to How podcast, where we explore adventures in STEM. After an absolutely incredible virtual Canada-wide science fair this past few weeks, it was clear that you all wanted to hear more from our Platinum and Best Project Award winners. So, over the next few weeks, I'll be catching up with them all to learn more about their science fair projects and the adventures they've had along the way. Today, I'm joined by Hardit Singh, a grade 9 student from Waterloo, Wellington, and our Best Project Innovation Award winner at Canada-wide Science Fair 2021 for his project, Speculor, a comprehensive teleophthalmology platform for people-centered eye care. I've got plenty of questions, including how to pronounce, obviously, that word in his project title, and I asked our wonderful community for question suggestions as well. So without further delay, let's get into it. Hardith, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
Excellent. Well, do you want to start us off by introducing yourself a little bit and briefly explaining what your project is about and how do you say teleophthalmology?
Yeah, so my name is Harthit. I'm a grade 9 student. I'm going into grade 10 this September. I'm from Waterloo, Ontario. And my project was Specular, which is a teleophthalmology platform. So basically, the goal of the project was to provide a low-cost imaging solution to take pictures of the eye and then AI algorithms to classify those images for disease so that eye care can be brought to everyone.
Nice. And so first up, community question, of course, where did your idea come from? How did you get started in this?
Yeah, so about 2 years ago, my friend, he had a retinal detachment. So basically the retina, which is basically the part of your eye that allows you to see, it takes your light, the light, and it sends all that information to your brain. It started to peel off of his eye, of the back of his eye, basically. And he went to three different ophthalmologists and other experts. And even after seeing those three experts, he was misdiagnosed all three times, and for different reasons, but he was misdiagnosed, and he went nearly blind because of it. And he was really lucky to have caught it just in time before the damage would have been gone to a point from a point with no return. So that really got me thinking, if it was happening to someone in a more research rich area like Waterloo, Ontario, what would the conditions be like in another place which doesn't have as much experts and technology as us in a rural area or in a low income area? So that really got me into researching. So I read the World Health World Report on Vision from the World Health Organization. And it had a lot of statistics about eye care and its accessibility. And those statistics really made me want to solve that problem.
Yeah, I love that you've combined like what is a report from a World Health Organization. So, you know, discussing the state of care, like health, eye care around the world. And then you brought your own personal connection to that as well. I imagine that was quite a motivating factor, knowing that your friend had gone through this so recently, kept you going for the past 12 months.
Yeah, and now he has fully recovered, and me and him are now trying to work and actually build a company out of my project to actually provide it. So now he's doing great.
That's so awesome. That's amazing to hear. Okay, we'll get on to what's happening next shortly, but before we get there, tell me, how did you learn all about ophthalmology and AI? Where did you find the information? I can't imagine you being taught that in high school.
Yeah, so artificial intelligence and building classification algorithms, I already knew how to do that, a basic understanding of it from previous projects where I've used it. And how I learned that was mainly through YouTube videos, books, and honestly just trying things out, just playing around until something works. That especially works for hardware as well, where you're just tinkering and tinkering until you understand what's happening. Same with optics, you tinker with the lenses, and you see how everything works, and you just experiment, and then you get an understanding of it. So I learned it through tutorials, books, and just playing around with all the different fields until I had a good enough understanding to build my project.
Nice, yeah, I love that, self-directed learning. And that's the key benefit of project-based learning, is that it's not just like you're stuck in high school, you go to a math class or you go to a physics class or something, and that's all you learn for an hour. You know, when you focus on a project, you have to learn all of these different areas all at once and then figure out how do they all connect together.
Yeah.
I imagine there are a few different challenges trying to get the hardware to work and then the software to work and then trying to get the hardware to work with the software. Did you want to talk a little bit about like what some of the challenges you faced?
Mm-hmm. There was a couple of integration issues, like just getting the hardware to work with the software, as you mentioned, getting it to all work. One of the biggest issues was more of a hardware issue, where I was doing all my testing in a lab. So I would have a model eye, and all my hardware would be tested on that, in a lab, in a very controlled setting. But then when I actually got to test my hardware in the real field, everything failed. Because I designed my prototype to work in perfect conditions. So when I used it in a less ideal situation with poor lighting and an actual human moving the device and holding it and trying to keep the patient still, the device didn't work at all. So that taught me that I should also consider the actual use case in real life. And then for the AI, it's almost the exact same thing. Currently, the training sets are often really high quality images. So images taken by like 25,000, images taken by devices that cost $25,000 plus. And these images are very high resolution. But when you're in the field with my device, it's not going to get as high resolution as those images, which would throw the AI off. I also had to take that in account, and I integrated really low quality images in my training to account for the low quality images that would be taken by hardware in the field with poor lighting.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good point too, is that so often, you know, we think on such theoretical lines and, you know, within perfect laboratory conditions, but if you can't make it work in the real world, then there's not much point in what you've done, right? So it's really that key challenge is making it work in the real world when things don't go the way you hope they would. Do you want to discuss a little bit, how did it feel that first time when you'd put all of this effort in, you'd built the hardware, you'd tested this software, and then it didn't work? What goes through your mind at that point?
It was like a mix of a frustration almost after all that work. You got frustrated because you put so much effort in and it didn't work at all. But it also gave that feeling of, okay, how do I fix this? What should I do next? Because that whole process of testing and failing, because when you're doing a project and if you don't fail at all, then you really haven't either done anything new or your project... there would be much more innovation that you could do in your project if you do fail, as failure will help you. So it also gave me that feeling of knowing that I'm on a right track, because the failure will help me. I learned from my mistakes, so I knew that there was going to be success some point in the future, and this failure was just a stepping stone towards that.
That's a really good mentality to have, and that's definitely something that takes time to develop. It's not something you just like wake up with some days. But yeah, I really like the way that you frame that, is that it's not necessarily a mistake, but it's a stepping stone. So instead of feeling down and feeling that self-pity, like, oh, this was a waste of time, think, no, how do I take this now and how do I learn and how do I make it better so that this doesn't happen again?
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. So then as you're going through all this and as you're going through all these challenges, who did you turn to for support through this project? Like, how did you find your mentors? You know, this is a community question as well. And how did you find the people that could help you with your project?
Mm-hmm. So I emailed a professor, many professors at the University of Waterloo, the optometry department, in the optometry department. And I worked with one of them and his grad students. So I would often, if I ran into a struggle or some problem or some questions, I would end up emailing them, mainly his students, who also do other various research related to the eye. So it was really great because they would also have their own problems and everyone would just sit down and discuss maybe monthly about what everyone is doing. And after a while, like, I was almost treated just like a grad student in that group, where we were all doing our own research and then helping each other out, giving suggestions. But I mainly found my mentor by emailing a bunch of people until one professor responded. And I would turn to them and his grad students for help.
Nice. Yeah, it only takes one, right? Like, you only just need to find that one person willing to help you out, to really help give you that direction and to give you the advice and support you need along the way. So it's fantastic that, yeah, you just have to email a lot of people. And that's definitely something that YSC is looking to assist with this year. You know, through My STEM Space, we're hoping to put together some resources on how to actually find a mentor. What would an email even look like for you to be sending to mentors? Because it is such an important piece of the step that truly does help take projects from good to great. And so after all of this work, after all of the support, after all of the challenges, what is it that you discovered? Tell us about your project. Like, what was the thing that you finally got to? What's your conclusion? What was your aha moment?
Yeah. So for the hardware, my main, since my project was an innovation, it was more like what worked. And for the hardware, I found that using cross-polarization that's commonly found in the very expensive fundus cameras, that worked really well for making sure that there was no glare in the fundus images, on top of the fundus images, which this cross-polarization technique is not common among low-cost fundus cameras like mine. And they often lack this cross-polarization, so there's a lot of glare in their images. So that was the main moment where the hardware started to work out and the images were really clear. And for the AI, after playing around with standard classification techniques and like feature extraction and then using like a support vector machine and a basic classification methods, and after having that failed, I then tried training my own convolutional neural network, and that also failed. But then when I started doing transfer learning to train a convolutional neural network, I also developed my own training method, combining supervised and reinforcement learning. And that ended up resulting in the highest accuracies, especially for the disease glaucoma, which was the highest reported accuracies in literature. So those are both amazing parts, the cross-polarization for the hardware and the new training technique for transfer learning for the software.
What an incredible outcome. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And so obviously the next question, I guess, is then, like, why is this important for us? Why have you put in all of this effort? Like, what are you hoping to gain from all of this research?
So this device will be able to help many people who wouldn't be able to get eye care normally, because currently the devices are really expensive. So the fundus camera is around $5,000 plus. The patient will have to go to a tertiary center in urban areas or in more resource rich cities. So my project will really help bring the care to the patient, providing a more people centered approach. And it'll allow people to bring care to places of need who wouldn't get it in the first place. So that is why it is really important, and that is why it's a stepping stone towards that.
Yeah, it's truly, truly incredible. Like when reading through your project online, to think that the Canon camera that's so often used in Canada is $15,000, and your project is, was it $350? I think you said you got the hardware down to
$300.
I mean, what a price difference that is, and to still have such good results from the end, it's truly outstanding. And you've actually done real world testing in India already, haven't you? You sent your hardware, and the AI is already working in India. You want to talk a little bit about what you felt when the ophthalmologist in India confirmed that your prototype was sufficient for accurate diagnosis?
Yeah, the first time when he told me, when I got like the news back from the first prototype, like I said, it was frustrating, but I knew it was a stepping stone. And the second time when I heard out that that the images were really well, like they turned out really good, it was really amazing. And it was really surprising as well. I wasn't expecting it to work still, because I only had access to a model eye at the lab. So that was the only testing I could do. And then once it is in India, I can't make any modifications to it. So it's kind of a Hail Mary where I'm just sending a prototype blindly for them to test. So it was really surprising and amazing. But then it got me, again, I always thought, okay, it's a stepping stone. What can I do next? So I was always thinking next, okay, the images are good, but there's always something I can do better. So I realized that the images that they were giving, and the ophthalmologists also told me that there's some lighting issues. So that idea of, okay, I appreciated it, and then I also started to think of it as another stepping stone. But it was very surprising and amazing to hear the news.
I can imagine, yeah. And so humble from you, just from reading your report to know just how well it worked. To say that you felt really good about it is so humble, but truly an incredible result. So then let's talk about what comes next then. So I imagine there's further work on the AI model, maybe a better lens with the specular hardware, obviously trying to fix the lighting issues. How does this all play into what you've been doing since CanadaWide and what you're hoping to do on the project going forward?
Yeah, so for the hardware, I'm mainly trying to reduce the cost and improve the lighting issues and improve the lighting issues. So currently, most of the cost from the hardware is all from the lens. The lens itself was probably $250 itself. I could reduce it by using lower quality lenses or a different type of lens. So that's what I'm trying to try to do to lower the cost. I'm trying to make the prototype a little bit more ergonomic. Actually, when I was at the science fair with the CanadaWide science fair judges, one of the judges gave me a feedback about my device saying it's too boxy and it's a little scary of a device and it would be a little hard to handle. So I'm taking that feedback to also improve this prototype on my hardware. And for the software, my goals are to, number one, do more diseases. So right now I'm able to do glaucoma, age-related macular degeneration, and I'm trying to work on doing many more diseases. And the great thing about transfer learning is I'm able to reapply the same model over multiple diseases. So I just have to find the right parameters and training method. And the other thing I want to do is add explainability to it. So right now, AI is kind of a black box. You don't know why it's making the decision it's making. So I'm trying to figure out why is it making the classification it is. And based off that, it can help the doctors make a better diagnosis and confirm and trust the artificial intelligence with this diagnosis. Because if it's looking at the correct features and it's saying it's a certain disease, then the doctor can be certain that, oh yes, it makes sense. The AI found the disease in this image and it's right where it's showing it in the image. So, and then the goal of all of this is to probably do one more field test in the real world. And the end goal is to commercialize the technology, because my whole goal of the project was to bring care to people who need it And my own, the only way I can do that is to actually bring the project to the real world. So that's the big future of my project.
Nice. What a dream to have. And I noticed in your project board, you also mentioned that you had actually published another paper where you used AI technique to differentiate between pneumonia and COVID. So it's not even just you're looking at eye care diseases, you're actually trying to use your AI methods to assess a whole bunch of different diseases around the body.
Yeah.
And still using the same sort of hardware technique too, I imagine. So that's where that choosing the right parameters comes into play, I guess.
Yeah, it's the same exact technique. I'm just reapplying it and finding the right parameters. And I'm able to train on practically any data set and make a classification algorithm for it.
Fantastic. Well, I can't wait to see where your project ends up. And talking about publishing, do you want to talk a little bit about the process you went through to get your research published in the Journal of Optical Society of America, A? How did it feel to see your research published in a legitimate journal?
That was probably the most amazing and exciting days of my life. When I found the acceptance, I was jumping up and down practically, just knowing that I got published. Because no one expects someone this young to publish, and if I do fail, I went in with this mentality that if I do fail, it doesn't really matter because I'm a kid, and it was still a really good learning experience writing the entire paper, and I went in with that mentality, but it was just amazing to see it get accepted, and the process for it was I had a classification AI. So I submitted it to another journal from Elsevier. I don't remember exactly which journal it is, but I submitted it to that, and it got rejected at first because they called it not novel enough. So that feedback from the editor gave me a stepping stone to work off of. Okay, they say my work isn't novel enough, so now I have to improve it. So then I applied to the Journal of Optical Society of America, and I had to write the entire paper again with my new AI, my new work that I did from the feedback I got from the Elsevier Journal. And after that, it got accepted with major revisions. So basically, they wanted me to do a lot more work on my project before they can actually publish it. So they found some errors in my work saying that I need to fix this. And they also told me some new things to try out to improve my work. And it was really amazing, that entire process, because it was all stepping stones. It really helped me bring my project to the level where it was. So the entire publication process from the first journal I applied to, which was probably in July, and then it got accepted in May of 2021. So it was almost an entire year of work just to get it published. And those stepping stones really improved the project.
Yeah, the feedback loop process is so, so important for refining particularly complicated topics like both hardware and software in the same sort of project. And obviously you can get feedback from all sorts of sources. So you obviously, you know, you had mentors, you had real-life ophthalmologists in India, and then you also had two different types of journals providing feedback on your project. And at each step of that process, you refine your project just that little bit more, until all of a sudden you have this absolutely incredible project that wins at the Canada-wide Science Fair. Yeah, I like the way that you've approached that and the mentality you have along the way to see it as a stepping stone to creating something truly incredible. And so as part of that as well, being able to tell a good story is so important, you know, particularly when you have such a complicated project that you want to communicate to others. What advice do you have for other students trying to improve their science communication skills? Like you specifically, how do you go about telling and explaining your project to friends, to family, to judges or the general public? Because not all of those people will have, you know, a background in AI or hardware or lenses or ophthalmology. You know, how did you figure out what to say, how to say it?
Yeah, so when explaining it to like the general public or your friends or family, people who may not have any experience in the subject that you're talking about, You really want to keep it to a very simple level, so I would cut out any technical details. But if there was something technical, you should always find an easy or way to explain it or an analogy. Otherwise, you wouldn't. Do you really understand it if you can't explain something that easily? This mentality is coming from Richard Feynman, where he was able to take very complicated subjects and explain it in such a beautiful and easy to understand way where everybody in the general public could understand. So the idea of taking that complex thing, maybe making an analogy or making like simplifying it so that everybody could understand. So you can remove many technical details, but anything that you think you can simplify, try and simplify it so that they can understand your project to a level where they can really get a meaning out of it.
Yeah, and I think getting a meaning is so important too. Like, you don't have to focus so much on the how of a project when you're explaining it to people who won't understand the how of the project. Focus on what you did, why you did it, and then what does it matter? You know, so just as you say, like, you can simplify the how and just focus on those other areas instead, just to really communicate what it is that you did and why it's so important. All right, so let's switch gears a little bit and let's talk about Science Fair. What is your favorite part of Science Fair? Why should people be doing Science Fair?
I love the part of just meeting new people and exploring all the other amazing projects at the fair. It was amazing with all the interactions I had with the judges. I learned a lot from them, especially of things to improve on my project. And just exploring all these other really cool projects, especially if this was an in-person fair, that would have been amazing. Because you would get to go around to all the different booths and talk to people and really learn about all their projects. But especially in the online fair, we still got to do so much interesting learning and communicating and really just getting to explore all the various science projects that everybody in Canada has made. And I think that's the really amazing fun part about a science fair, is just getting to explore and talk to people all around Canada, which you would normally not get to do.
And what do you dream of being when you're older?
I would say an entrepreneur. I really like working for myself. So I want to be able to make solutions or innovations or projects that could really help the world or solve some problem and be one of the main people who help lead it. So an entrepreneur who can do the engineering aspects and the computer science aspects of a project, because if an entrepreneur has all those skills, they would really be able to build up a project and get it up and running really easily. So definitely probably an entrepreneur.
Nice. And big question for you. Why is STEM important?
Because it provides a new insight into the world. It provides a new beauty into the world that most people would not see. So, like, everybody can understand the beauty of a flower, but a scientist can understand all the important mechanisms inside of that flower and understand how it interacts. And that in that whole process of that is beautiful in itself. And STEM is what creates that deeper understanding in our world that you wouldn't have without it. And it allows us to develop new solutions to solve our big problems in our world, like climate change, hunger, world hunger. STEM is going to be the solutions towards that. Medicine needs STEM. The devices in hospitals, they need STEM. It was developed by engineers and physicists. So just STEM is like the backbone of our world, and pursuing STEM will give you that insight and that insight into that beauty of it.
What a fantastic answer. Yeah, beautiful. Quote that, snippet, put it on your wall. Amazing. So last question then for you, Hardith. Any other last final advice you have for people listening to this episode?
Yeah, I would want everybody to keep their childlike curiosity. So when everybody was like 2 or 3, like toddler age, everybody was just so keen on exploring and trying new things out. For example, when I was about 2 or 3, I think, I took a screwdriver and I stuck it into a wall outlet because I was curious. And I wanted to know what would happen. I also drank dish soap because I was curious and I wanted to know what it tasted like. But that curiosity of just trying things out and not worrying about the failure aspect. And as you grow up, people start to think, oh, it's just going to fail, or why should I try this? But keeping that curiosity and not thinking about the failure will really help you think of new solutions and think of new ideas, because you're going to be pursuing into territories that many people will just skip over.
What an easy and carefree child you must have been. Your poor parents worrying about you all the time. Hardith, this has been an absolutely fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you so much for all of your incredible answers. I mean, what a fantastic project, an absolutely beautiful reason to choose that topic, and what an outstanding result you've achieved. I can't wait to see where you take this project. I mean, you're only grade 9. I can't wait to see what you come up with next. You've got such a bright future ahead of you. And for anyone listening, if you haven't already, I truly do implore you to check out Hardith's project. We will have the link in the show notes to this episode or in the YouTube description, wherever you're watching this episode. So do please go check it out, leave some comments, share the love, let him know just how much you appreciated this episode, you appreciate this conversation, and you appreciated all of the work that he's put in over the last 12 months. We're going to have another incredible episode for you coming up shortly. We've still got quite a few more winners to interview, and until then, stay curious. Thanks, everyone.